The Sean Hughes Show.
Happy Easter Sunday. It's Sean Hughes Show. Thanks for listening in. Got a new producer. He's going to be the first guest, actually. He's got quite interesting things to say, Ashley Hames. And then we have Valerie Fox, who is, we'll let her talk about what she wants to talk about. Michael Greco, don't mention Peppy. And then a fantastic band called Crybaby in live, singing with us on this glorious day. It's just amazing how people just give up their Easter Sundays for us. We record on a Monday. It's Elvis Costello.
He's a fan figure of a man and handsome too. With his eyes upon the secret places he'd like to undo. Still, he knows who and where. Got all the things you need and some that you will never. But you make him sound like frozen foodies. Love will last forever. Still, he knows what you want and what you don't allow. Supposed to be. Acting innocent and proud, still you know what is after. Like a massive dog with his paws on, while we are dying after. His turquoise pajamas and his boots inside the hat. I hope you're happy now, cause you're super.
Wonderful Elvis Costello. Like, he's saying, I hope you're happy now, but then he's saying it quite angrily, so I don't know what to pick up on that, folks. You know, is he like, you know, is it tongue-in-cheek, someone who's left him? First guest in, Ashley Hames, are you happy? I hope you're happy now.
Well, I mean, there's degrees of happiness. Why are you looking so deeply into that song? It's just a good tune with a few beats. I mean, come on.
Get out. How dare you need to
relax.
Elvis Costello wrote Shipbuilding. Are you just saying that?
Shipbuilding is good, but I prefer the Suede cover. Have you heard that? That's, you know, they did that for the
Suede. I don't like Suede at all. They'll never be played on the show.
Oh.
I know that's going to affect their money, income. So, Ashley Hames, you're my new producer.
Yeah, I was brought in here to pop up the show and get bands like Suede on.
Yeah, well, you've messed and mucked up there. Anyone who's taking drugs just does not get on the show.
No,
Or possible bisexuals.
Oh, okay.
It's just a rule.
That rules me out on both counts.
It's a Sunday. So, of course, you do your own show on FUBAR on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And that's a sex show.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, that's sort of where my expertise lies, and I've had lots of experience.
Well, you're picking yourself up there, aren't you? Is that your chat up line?
Yeah, hang on, no. I'm not talking about me in bed, the action.
Well, what else
is it
to know then?
Well, then it's, you know, look, it's the world of sex is a beautiful kaleidoscopic area where it just never runs out of information. There's always an expert on something or other and different fetishes to talk about. Have you listened to the show? Maybe not. Many other people have, and the response we've been getting is amazing.
I'm not doubting it's a great show, but I'm just saying, like, you're probably repeating the same thing every week.
No, absolutely. That's
No.
Well, I insist, sir.
You know who you remind me of there? Because have you been watching the Oscar Pretorius case?
I haven't, actually, but I'm interested in it.
But he keeps on referring, because it's always the guy who's questioning him, but he keeps on going back to the female judge, so it's going all the time. I find that really weird.
Yes,
well, also the fact that there's a case when he's a murderer.
Yeah.
Just put him in prison.
Yeah.
The only time they keep on going to recess during that is so people can go to the toilet without him shooting them.
So hang on, let's make this clear. You just want him put in prison without a trial?
I want the trial, but I want the trial to be like the game. Right, okay, you thought it might be an intruder or it could have been your girlfriend. Yeah, put him down for 12 years. That's pretty much what I want to happen.
Okay.
And that's not right wing. I'm actually very, you know, I don't want the death penalty or anything like that. No. But I'm not buying it. It's all OJ all over again.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what you think about this, whether that... It's kind of like it goes back to that whole Paddy Power thing, that horrible bet that they had. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was about the Oscar Pistorius trial, wasn't it?
What?
It's become entertainment.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's kind of healthy, but...
Well, that the world's gone that way. It's fucked.
Yeah.
So you're gonna help me book my guests from now on. So no comics anymore.
So no, basically, so our first guest is a porn star,
right?
Porn actress Valerie Fox. She's tremendous. I've spoken to her before, and she's excellent value. And we'll tell you. I mean, I think again, like you know, you've been slightly iffy about you know, me sexing up the show.
Well, I don't mind that, but you've had your cock out since you came in, so
and you were feeling and enjoying, and I like the way you've already embraced that.
Yeah, it was a little
but also I think just generally, I think that we do tend to kind of, not, I wouldn't say necessarily we all look down on porn stars, but we always look at. What's the problem there? What's happened? What's gone wrong?
Can you leave that for my interview, please?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Sorry.
You're the producer. I'm the presenter. Yeah.
Quite demanding, aren't you? I walked in here and you're like, get us a fucking glass of water. And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
All right, so even Oscar gets that at trial. And I haven't killed anyone.
Yeah, okay.
So that's not asking too much.
No.
But the reason, like, you wanted to come in and talk, because you consider yourself a sex addict.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't something I've necessarily spoken about before at all. And I've
not on your show.
No, actually, right. No.
So I guess what people want to know is, what do you and Michael Douglas get up to every night?
Well, you may well make light of it, Sean. But
that's my job.
But I think with all addictions, I think you recognise you have one when you're doing things to deliberately harm yourself. So it's very self-destructive behaviour, and it's also destructive of other people, but especially with sex.
But do you think every addiction is bad for you?
An addiction to raw fruit and vegetables is probably not that bad.
That's
for you.
What I was thinking about. But so, right, look, you're a good-looking fella. What age are you now, 42?
Yeah, 43.
Right, you look 42, so well done on that. So what, have you always been aware that, is this an addiction that's built up?
Yeah, it's definitely, well, certainly addiction is something that doesn't necessarily creep up on you. I think instinctively you know you have a problem, but you don't necessarily know how to deal with it, and you're afraid of the reception that you'll get from other people if you were to tell them. Especially something quite shameful, I suppose. Sex addiction is kind of like, you know, what, you know, you mentioned...
People do laugh at
it. I think you mentioned Michael Douglas, but his addiction, I think, was just sort of going around and shagging loads of people. Mine was more specifically prostitutes. So, again, I was kind of... I feel that I was almost sort of delving into a slightly shady, criminal-esque world and an exploitative world, and that sickened me. But it's a compulsive... became very compulsive.
Did you think you had been exploited as well?
No, not in the slightest, no. I just felt that I was just... it reached the point where I remember going to see my last girl that I saw, and
you're talking prostitute, not
yeah,
girlfriend.
Yeah, the last prostitute that I saw.
And when was that?
God, months ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm kind of clean. I mean, it literally is like that. But I remember seeing her, and she was kind of a bit kind of wasted, and I was like, but again, like you kind of go into those situations. I quite like the danger and how fucked up it might be. You're putting yourself into situations that you're not comfortable
with. So where was it then? Obviously not a dress, but what are we talking about? So when you ring up?
Yeah, you know, you look on a website and, you know, have a little gander, see what you think, and then just go for it. So I went for it on this occasion. And then I remember leaving the flat afterwards and retching on the street because I was just so disgusted with myself. So I was never...
But did you enjoy it while it was happening?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Did you enjoy anything about it?
I mean, I would say there was like a few isolated, vaguely enjoyable incidents where I'd particularly connect with one of the prostitutes and you kind of get on really well.
But isn't it all about the disconnect? I thought that's what the whole thing
was. Well, it depends how deeply you want to look into it. I mean, very briefly, I would say, you know, I think, again, I don't think this is a DNA makeup. I think it does kind of stem back to childhood, and it does go, for me, I think it's about wanting to be noticed, wanting to be heard and seen, and because I don't think it's any accident that I've sort of come into journalism, broadcast journalism, because I want people to hear my voice, and it sounds really narcissistic, but essentially what I was, if I wasn't getting that, the kind of logical... endpoint is to actually fuse with somebody else. So they're actually feeling me, seeing me, hearing me really close up.
But then there's another point, like if you wanted to, you could go to certain places and chat up women and probably get the same results.
Yeah.
So why didn't you just go that angle?
Yeah. I don't know whether that was convenience, laziness, the fact that I didn't... I think I also have sort of slight issues with alcohol in terms of if I was to go out, I'd have to wade through a lot of booze in order to get to the point where
I was comfortable
enough.
If this was the job interview for the producer, you wouldn't be doing that.
but
it's never sexual gratification then?
No. It's literally like having a monkey on your shoulder going, go do it. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, really? It's like being schizophrenic. Yeah. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, have you really come back to haunt me? And then it's like, literally, like I remember, you know, my journey from my flat to the tube to the prostitute's house would kind of be in like a bit of a trance. Right. It wasn't me.
Is it a little bit like when you kind of arrange to buy some cocaine?
Yes.
It's the anticipation.
Anticipation, absolutely. And also the process of doing the line is far more enjoyable than the actual feeling chemically afterwards. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Well, no, it's an interesting take. But so what, I know you're in therapy for it, but what device are you using to, because obviously that monkey's always going to be on your shoulder.
Well, I don't think so, actually, because I think I guess that people with different addictions deal with these things differently or have different feelings. Certainly for me, since I've been having therapy and since I kind of put a full stop to it, because it was just making me unhappy and I doubt it was making any of the girls particularly happy. And it's just a world that I didn't want to be in anymore.
And you go for a particular type of girl as well, yeah?
Well, yeah. I mean, predominantly I like the Asian girls. But
what do you think that's about, then?
I'm not too sure. I think it's all about outsiders and relating to the underdog a little bit more in life.
Very complicated.
Well, yeah, it is very complicated. And I don't really want to come out with kind of COD psychology because I'm not qualified to do that. But those certainly are the discussions that we've been having.
So you're trying to get to the bottom of why it's mainly Asian girls that you're going for?
Yeah, we have spoken about that. But I also think, you know, one of the significant girlfriends in my life was Asian at quite a young age. And that sort of affected me. Whether I'm trying to get that back, I don't know.
You could have saved yourself a lot of bother and just rang her.
Yeah, but she doesn't like me anymore.
Well, mainly because you were going with prostitutes all the time.
Well, interestingly, whenever I've been with someone, I haven't.
Right.
You know, it's so complicated, and we've.
Do you go into any group sex addiction therapy?
No, I haven't. I've been thinking about doing that. At the moment, I just have a one-on-one. It's called psychodynamic therapy. But I've thought of going to those things. But, do I really want to hear someone else spouting on about
I must say, just to lighten it a little bit, yeah. I was in Dublin this week.
Yeah. And, did you get laid?
No, I've no interest.
Really?
But, yeah, I haven't actually.
You're on Tinder, Sean.
Yeah, for an experiment. but this is I was getting a taxi to the airport,
right.
And the guy was 70,
mm-hmm.
And I just happened to mention we were basically talking about football. He was quite knowledgeable,
right.
So we were having a chat, and then I just said, "Oh, I'm going to." He says, "Well, you're up to next. I'm going to Riga in Latvia." And he went, "Oh, that's fucking brilliant. The brothel's there." And I said, "What?"
Yeah.
He said, "Oh, the brothels are amazing." I said, "But surely you're married and kids and stuff." She says, "I never do anything at home, but when I'm away, she feels the benefit of it though, because I'm thinking of that girl when I'm having her."
Oh my God!
So,
right.
But you know, there's so many fucked up people there.
Well, I don't know. Look, and also, I suppose it's like every other addiction. Like, so if you. Drinking and gambling and all those sorts of things that some people can do it, I suppose, in a vaguely healthy way. And there's a few of us that can't. Someone like him, I don't like it. I don't like that kind of attitude. But I think there's something in the male makeup, the male psyche that makes us want to seek out those adventures and those forbidden fruits, I guess.
Why don't you try?
Mm.
Football coupons, I find them quite exciting. I've never been with a prostitute. Never felt the need.
No, and many people haven't, but many, many people have.
What's the most you've ever paid, then?
Most I've ever paid? Oh, Christ, I mean, I don't know. We're not talking hundreds. I mean, we're talking a couple of hundred.
But we are talking hundreds, then.
Well, a couple of hundred, yeah. But not like, you know, 700 or 800. It's like, you know, my budget's quite
right, low. So what'd you get for 200 quid, then?
Well, whatever you want, pretty much, within the space of an hour.
Cup of tea.
But again, my taste, my sexual tastes are very, very meat and two veg. I mean, I really am extremely unadventurous in the bedroom. I mean, I really just don't want that much at all.
Even when you're in a loving relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. This is another thing about, the strange thing about doing my show is that really I'm talking about a lot of foreplay.
Like foreplay, then?
No. Can't be arsed with it at all. I mean, I'm the worst boyfriend. Like, literally, preferably 2-3 minutes. Just like, a quick hump. I mean, like...
Well, you should be paying about 6 quid for that, though.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean...
So what do you do for the other 56 minutes?
Well, I mean, usually I just do it a few times. And, you know, I'd have to have, like, a little bit of a rest. I was Siggy.
Bring in a substitute.
You know, but that is a weird thing because I'm doing
very
this
liberal
show.
They let you smoke in their flat.
Yeah, well, some of them make me lean out of the window.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah. This is good info for people.
But I'm endlessly fascinated by sex. And there's kind of, I suppose, there's that kind of irony that, of course, here's a guy with a sex addiction. What the hell's he doing a show about sex for? But it's like, it's kind of like being an alcoholic, but I'm in the pub. I don't necessarily partake in all of the sexual frenzies that are probably going on all around us every day. But I like talking about it, and
right,
I'm qualified to do so.
Well, listen, I'll play a tune, and then we can talk about things other than sex,
cool.
about your life. Bit of a time for an Irish fella here. Does David Kidd dance with you?
Was a long night. I won't sweat on your neck. Salt and water on my breath. Step after step. It was a long night I won't forget. All I wanna do, all I wanna do, all I wanna do, baby, is dance with you.
That beautiful David Kitt there. Now Ashley Haynes is still in with us, but we've brought in Valerie Fox early because Ash has been talking about his addiction to sex, and Valerie works in the industry. I asked you what you wanted to be referred to, Valerie, and you said a whore.
Yes, doesn't bother me at all.
But listening to what Ashley says, like when you are, you know, selling sex to customers, is there a total disconnect?
No, not total. I think if you want to be a really good whore, you have to connect with them in some level. I try and find what they like from an early point, and then just, you know, tease the fuck out of them. And,
right.
Yeah.
But so. Surely there must be times where you just go, like this is what I mean about the disconnect as well, because obviously I'd imagine the majority of people aren't sexy men.
You'd be surprised. Where I work, what part of London I work, I get mostly just city guys from, you know, like Shoreditch and, you know, businessmen, nicely dressed, posh. Yeah, I mean, I don't really get many mingers.
Right.
Yeah. So,
but what happens then if you get a minger?
That's only happened to me a couple of times, and I was really, really, I was just kind of a bitch to him, and so he never wanted to come back.
So, but did he ask you to be a bitch to him, or...?
No, there are some that do ask me to be, but yeah. I just chose... I was like, you know what? You're a minger. You automatically... I hate you. In my head, I was like, I hate him. I hate this person already. He's been in my flat 5 minutes, and I hate him.
And normally that doesn't happen, though.
No.
So, from your experience, do you find what Valerie's saying? Like, do they always want to please you, or can you tell... Some of them just don't want you to be.
Yeah,
there.
You'll
immediately. Depends on your price range.
Look, it does depend on your price range, but also you just get an immediate vibe. And there were many occasions, countless in fact, where I would book someone, book a whore, as you're referring to them, Valerie, go along, open the door, and then stand for about 10 seconds and then just leave. Because it just didn't feel right. And that's probably the worst thing for a girl. I mean,
but is
I
that
know.
Because they don't look like the picture that they've got on their side?
There'd be an element to that, but it would also just be: is there an immediate connection with this girl, or is there not? And if there wasn't, I'd leave. But the point I kind of wanted to pick up on is what Valerie was saying about mingers and about. I think the whole stereotype is exactly as you'd imagine. You always think, you know, dirty old man in a raincoat. Now I could go and pull someone. Hopefully, I've still got that in me.
Just
but I choose not to. And you can't label these people. It's like any walk of life. They may look amazing. They are not the stereotype.
But,
of the dirty
yeah, but
old
I
man.
Think what you're saying, Valerie, is because you're working in the city part. I think it's people who are excessive in their lifestyle. Absolutely. So they're not lonely. They just have too much money.
Yeah, they have too much money. They're usually married, and they work all the time, and they've got to go home. They don't have time to go pull some bird from the bar, and they don't want an emotional, long-term relationship. They want to get the rocks off with a hot girl.
But yeah, it's just that thing of, as I say, how do you feel straight after? Is it an acting job for you?
Sometimes, yeah.
But sometimes it's just very natural and you really enjoy it.
Yeah, it really depends on the person, but, I mean, I'm professional enough to, even if, you know, I don't fancy them, they don't know that.
Except for the real mangers, you tell
them. Except for, you know, the small handful of people that I hate.
Hate's a very strong emotion. But do you think a lot of it is loneliness, or is it just, as we were saying, it's just excessive lifestyles and they feel that's another thing they should spend their money on?
I think there's some people that are quite lonely, and I do feel sorry for those. There's probably about 30% that are like that. The rest are just rich bastards.
Right. And so what are your rates then? You're the higher end of the scale, yeah?
Yeah, I'm 300 in call, 350 out call.
Right, and so way out of your range, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that's sadly...
If you want filming, it's an extra 100 quid. Right. If you want, like, a water sports, it's extra 100.
We go skiing together. that's not bad, a holiday. Is that a weekend? Or?
No. If you want to piss on, or right. do you like to piss on me?
Hang on. And you'd be cool with that, if I piss on you?
I love water sports. I love it. In my personal life, I love it. So it's like, when I charge extra for it, it's like a win-win, because I'm like, they don't know that I really fucking love it.
A stranger?
Yeah, no. I'm just like, they're like, oh, can I piss on you? And I'm like, well, you know, it's going to be 50 quid. And I'm like, yes.
But so, would you say, are you addicted to sex as well, then?
Yes.
And do you go to any counselling for it?
No, I don't need counselling. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just have a hard time finding, in my personal life, a partner who can keep up with my sex drive.
And have you got a partner at the moment,
no.
then?
No.
And have you... But obviously, you've had long-term partnerships.
Yeah.
And they've been absolutely fine by what you do?
Yeah, most of them.
Well, yeah,
Sean, you got a little glint in your eye now.
I've always got that. I'm Irish. Ash... So now that, Valerie's saying that she's addicted, but it's not a bad thing. So how does that make you feel?
Happy for her.
No, but how does it make you feel about yourself?
Well, about myself, just different. If you've got an addiction but you're fine with it, then, you know, more power to your elbow. In my case, it was just making me unhappy. It wasn't something I wanted to do. That doesn't mean I condemn necessarily people that do it. I certainly don't condemn the girls that are in that industry. Far from it, in fact. And the more I meet... certainly in more, let's say, normal social situations, then the more I doff my cap to them. But for me, it was unhealthy and I wasn't enjoying it, and I felt I was doing myself damage and harm, and I wanted to get away from it.
But do you never feel like that, Valerie? You must have those moments where you feel this is wrong.
No, not really.
So, well, I'm going to talk about the whole thing, but I just wanted to get the 2 points in. So what we'll do is we'll play a track, yeah. And then we'll find out how you got into the whole thing.
I'll say goodbye, Sean, and go to my producing thing and leave you and Valerie to...
Yeah, can I have some water, please?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
All right. Let's play... let's have a Christian Hurst song called Spain.
Smiling back,
delightful Christian Hurst there with Spain. In talking with me is Valerie Fox, an English porn star. So we were talking about prostitution with Ash when he was in. But now, so, like, you're still a young woman. So how did you start off? What was the beginnings of getting into the sex industry?
Honestly, this is going to sound really bad. I had a divorce and I was a single mother. And I needed to make money very quickly.
So what age were you then?
Then I was 23.
And you had no interest, like no inclination at all before that?
Well, before that I used to do sort of a sugar daddy thing. So I kind of was used to the whole sex in return for money. And I was still obviously like addicted to sex, so...
Valerie, is that where you go to a very posh club and like there's certain places where very rich men will hang out knowing that this goes on, rather than it like being a...
Yeah, that's one way of doing it. It's not quite as blatant that way. I think it's the same thing. It's just these men, they don't want to, I think, in their heads admit that it's basically just prostitution paying for sex, so they want to look at it as though, oh, I'm just a sugar daddy, you know. That makes them feel a little bit better and not as dirty, I guess.
And so where are you from originally?
Pardon?
Where are you from?
Richmond.
Right. Yeah. And so right, you were pretty much a single mom and you needed to get money.
Yeah.
So what happens next then?
So I literally rang up an agency one night and to my surprise, the lady was like, yeah, you can start tonight. And she sent me within a few hours to a hotel and I just did it. And I remember thinking... this is too easy. I've just made, I don't remember how much it was at the time, in an hour for literally just doing hardly anything. And at that point, it was like, I never stopped.
But so, like it seems like, because obviously people would be concerned about, especially where, not that it's your concern, but just like your view on it, where there seems to be a lot of sex trafficking going on in London now as well. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously it's the same kind of industry. Like, how do you feel about all that then?
Oh, I don't like the sex trafficking and all that. I wouldn't want any part of any of that. And I think that's horrible and wrong. But what I do is definitely not that. No,
I'm not saying for a moment it is, but like just the fact that goes on as well.
No, I think it's horrible. It's scary, these girls. And you can kind of tell in London, especially kind of which girls I think are going through that. If you look in some agencies and they're predominantly sort of Eastern European. And as Ashley was saying earlier, you walk in and the girl sort of acts like she doesn't want to be there or they look drugged up or whatever. Most likely you might have that kind of situation going on.
So you never get into a situation like... because, like, if you're working and you're not in the mood for it, but you need to make the money, do you use anything to kind of keep you going in that sense?
What I do is I don't work that often because I don't like getting burnt out, because I do love my work. I love being in the sex industry, so I make sure I have, like, I take usually 3 days off in a row, I go shopping, I go pamper myself, and I don't work that much. I'm to the point now I just don't see that many new people. I have regulars, so... it's not very stressful for me.
But before, take it when you were in school and stuff, did you have any ambitions to actually do anything career-wise?
Oh, I used to. I used to do, I am a qualified hair and makeup artist.
Right.
Yeah.
And was that something you think you might go back into, or you just go...
You know, I might do one day. I still do my friends', you know, hair and stuff in my flat. I've lots of times if they need a haircut or... colouring or something done, but
is it when you talk about your friends as well? They obviously everyone knows what you do because you're very open about it. But do you see it as like a separate life? And as you say, then your days off, it just doesn't really enter into it at all.
No, it's pretty intertwined into my life. I mean, my flatmate, she does it as well. Most of my friends are some way connected to the sex industry. There's not many who aren't in my little circle, so. Even on our off days, we're usually chatting shit about it or, you know, whatever.
But you were saying earlier on as well, like you're not in a relationship at the moment. But do you think it'll be quite hard for you to be in a relationship now that you've...
I've had a really successful relationship doing this job. I've had a couple of them. And the reasons they didn't work out was not because of my job. It was for other reasons.
No, but like just like because I'm just coming from playing devil's advocate in the sense of some people would be shocked by what you're saying, because
yeah.
like most people, and I'm sure you were the same. Like when you're 16, the dream is that you go, oh, I'm going to meet someone and fall in love, and they're the only person I'm going to be with. Like, were you like that at 16?
No.
What were you?
I was like anti-children, anti-marriage. I was probably complete opposite of that.
But two things you did very early on, though.
But then I did end up getting pregnant and getting married, and I think I felt slightly like I was in a cage. I needed to be let out. It wasn't my life. It wasn't for me. I think I'm capable of being an amazing mother and maintaining this, you know, part of my life. I keep them separate, obviously, but that's the way I like it. So.
And so then you went from that first time when you got in touch with the agency, and then you went further afield then, yeah?
Yeah, and I was just amazed at the amount of money you could make from it, and so it was slightly addictive. And then I did start sort of working too much. I got a bit greedy, and then I got really burnt out of it, and I took a bit of a break. And in that time, I started doing porn.
Well, so there's more money in prostitution than there is in porn, yeah?
I'd say so, yes. In the UK, yes. In America, it's about the same.
Right.
Yeah, you get paid more. When I was working in Los Angeles and stuff, you get paid immensely more for porn than you do here.
So, but like, is there a big porn industry in London, in England?
Not massive, no. It's just you've got only really a handful of decent companies here. If you want to work a lot, you've got to go. A lot of them do Spain or Budapest or go in America.
And so, was that kind of... So you obviously like sex, but do you actually like making the porn films?
Yeah, I do. So especially if it's a company that I... Well, right now I only shoot for companies that I like and want to work for, but no, absolutely, 100%. I love doing a really good scene, especially a really hardcore one, and then it getting done, seeing the result, and fans being like, oh, that was really horny, you know, I love it.
So you look at, like, the comments that they'll put on at the end of the video.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so with the, I take it it's mainly one-on-one with another male porn star.
Yeah.
So do you tend to know them already?
Yeah, in the UK, yeah. There's only a handful of male performers, really, and we all kind of know each other.
So you've got your favourite, yeah?
Yeah, I do have a couple of favourites.
So do you ask for them?
Sometimes. If I get my choice, I do. If it's not... And then there's a couple of... If I say, can you work with this person? Like, no, I don't like him.
But, all right, Minger, yeah. is it that thing where you'll pretty much do it all in one take, or is it an endlessly long day?
No, it depends on the company, really. Some companies, yeah, it can be horrendously long. You can be there for 7, 8, 9 hours. And others, you can do 2 or 3 scenes in a couple of hours.
So, but those days when you're doing, 8-hour shifts of having sex, like, that just must get tedious.
Well, it's not having sex for 8 hours, though. That's, like, a whole day would be... You get your own hair and makeup. It's like if it's for, like, say, a company like Harmony, which is you get a lot of fetish. So you're getting fetish makeup, fetish hair. You're getting latex put on you, which takes ages. And you've got to do the stills, and you've got to do the sex stills, and you've got to do hardcore, then you've got to do the softcore. So it is tiring, yes. But
that's the thing now, like, you know, would you be a little bit bored with sex?
No, I'm not. So I even ask myself this question sometimes, like, am I not bored of it? But I don't.
So is it like, you know, obviously, I guess most people like sex, but it generally is with someone, like, you love, and it's something you don't do all the time, so it's something you look forward to. But as I say, but you be doing it all the time, but you just love it every time.
Yeah, and I don't have to love someone, be in love with someone to have great sex with them.
Well, you know that from what you do.
So I think a lot of people maybe struggle with that. I think a lot of people like to have a nice emotional connection and then they have better sex. But for me, as long as the person is a good lover, then I can have great sex with them.
And so then your word again, whoring and porn in America as well?
I have done in America. I don't anymore, really, but I have done.
What, so have you put yourself in quite dangerous situations at times, though?
No, not with whoring. No, I'm always very safe about that.
But and so you've no interest in America anymore now either?
The reason I don't really like to whore in America is because the people over there bore me a bit.
You're not really there for the personality, though. It's
no,
just sex,
but,
isn't it?
But I guess this is going to sound really bad, but, like, to pay me for an hour, whereas here, you know, everybody, I don't even know what's going to happen. It could be 1 minute someone's pissing on me, the next minute I'm giving someone a massage, the next minute, you know, it just doesn't know. In America, it's like everyone's kind of the same, quite vanilla. and they're really into that, what's this called, the girlfriend experience, where they like to cuddle and quite intimate.
And you don't like that?
It's all right, but it's bored me after a while, you know? After a while, I just get a bit bored of that. I like a bit of kink.
And do you, because, like, I think it's a general rule in those situations where you don't kiss the client.
Yeah, I'm not overly keen on kissing them, no. But sometimes I will. I mean, a lot of clients probably don't want to kiss you. But
so if they went for a kiss, you'd go, no, to kind of pretty much let them know this is a transaction.
It depends on the client.
Right. Yeah. But so now, are your parents still around, are they?
I don't have a relationship with my parents.
Okay, and is that because of what you do?
No.
But so like, what would you say then women who think what you do is kind of degrading to women? What would your defence be for them?
What, with the porn side or the escorting
side?
Well,
both.
Well, for escorting, I wrote a blog about this a while back. I say to them, I find a lot of married women think, you know, prostitutes, we're the bad guys, right? But what they fail to realise is that without us, most of their marriages would probably be failing right now, because the guy's going to get his rocks off one way or the other, okay? The guys want sex, and that's just the way it is. And most of the time, their wives are just not giving it to them. So at the end of the day, I ask these women, you've got two options if you're not going to put out. Do you want him to spend a day or two with me a month and get his sex, and he's going to go home to you before dinner, be there for the kids? Or do you want him to go out to a restaurant, pull some girl, potentially have an emotional connection with that person, it then turn into a full-blown affair, then he wants to leave his wife, then he wants to leave the kids. Do you see what I'm saying?
Which brings me to a tiny point, Valerie, is have you ever had an emotional connection with someone?
Yes.
Like in the business?
Yes.
So that's kind of not de rigueur, really, is it?
No, it doesn't happen. It's happened a couple of times, though.
And do you let them know that?
I have done with one, because I think it was mutual.
Well, so you started going out together properly?
One we did, and the other, we don't go out. He's married.
Right. But you have a connection with him?
Yeah.
And so is that because you were with them a few times, or was it just a chemistry thing?
Well, I've known him, for a while now, and it's both. It's chemistry. We see each other, you know, a couple times a month, and he's lovely.
And do you think you've ever been in love, Valerie?
Have I ever been in love?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe I have.
And it just didn't work out?
No.
So, you kind of said your defence of the escort, which, like, to a degree, there's, you know, fair reasoning behind it. But then what about porn, then? What would your defence of that be?
What, for women who find it degrading?
Yeah.
Yes, I don't watch it.
Yeah, but that's not, you know...
No, I think... Do you know what? Everyone's going to have their own opinions about it. I don't... Kind of like a religion with me. I'm not religious, but I don't condone anyone who is.
Sure.
I just don't like them pushing their beliefs onto me. And I feel the same way about sex. I love sex. I'm very open with sex. If you're not, if you're prude, if it offends you, then don't look at it. Don't watch it.
But I of course you would have to say that, but like, I know there was a program on the television the other day. But see, this is the thing, and this is not your problem, but the internet means anyone of any age can watch porn, and do you not think you might be showing them the wrong way of, I was going to say doing things, but that sounds like ridiculous, but, you know, just like showing them something that isn't real. And, you know, because it's like there's so much porn that's free now as well.
Like you're asking if I'm showing them something that's not real, as in the sex isn't real?
Well, yeah, in the sense of like, you know, like people can be bombarded by that. And I think especially if you're, say, a young boy, like 14, who's watching a lot of porn, he might, you know, get the very wrong idea about women. Because, like, women tend to still be, you know, submissive in the porn. They're not seen as strong women in the films, are they?
Yeah. It just depends. I mean, there's so much porn out there, so many different variations. If you go to a fetish site, you could have a mistress who's, you know, giving it to the guy, being quite dominating
I'm not holding you responsible for anything, but I'm just saying, like, do you ever feel... Because you've got your child, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so do you ever feel like sometimes you kind of go, oh, maybe this is setting the wrong kind of...
No, I don't, actually. I'm so open. Both my kids, when they're old enough...
Two kids? You never mentioned the other one.
Yeah. When they're old enough, you know, I would be completely honest about what I do, and... I'm not going to be one of these parents that tries and forces what I believe onto my children. I want them to sort of learn themselves, make their own decisions, make their own opinions, form their own opinions about things.
But so how long more do you think? Because obviously that'll be the industry that it's all about looks as well. Mm. So what age do you now, Valerie, if you don't mind me asking?
27.
So you still got... So have you got actually a retirement age in mind?
I've kind of toned down shooting porn now.
We all have, come on.
Yeah. So I probably won't shoot much more of that. Probably in a couple of years I'll be done with porn altogether. And escorting, I think my goal is probably by the time I'm about 33, 34, I want to have enough put back into the bank where I can buy a flat, whatever I want to do.
And what would you do then?
Pardon?
What will you do yourself then?
I haven't decided yet. I don't know yet.
Because like you're pretty much just the same kind of lifeline as footballers.
Yeah.
So you basically you're saving like at the moment.
Yeah.
And so what's the most extreme stuff like you've done porn wise as well?
Well, the tricky thing with porn is that a lot of it is not allowed to be shown, like certain things, like even for example, like pissing. I think it's here in the UK you can't, and choking you can't show that. So a lot of things that happen sometimes in scenes, if we're getting into it too much, has to be edited out.
But why won't they allow pissing in English?
The pissing on someone's face is not allowed. Choking is not allowed. I don't know if you can still even spit on someone's face. I don't know.
Do people do that during sex?
Yeah.
Right. I'm so... Well, you know, I'm Irish, so I'm not using that as an excuse, but I've never thought, well, this is going well. I might spit in their face now.
Oh, yeah. No, they're really funny about little things that you can and can't do. So... To a degree, we're kind of limited to, if we want to have really rough sex, there's only so much you can kind of do for the camera. You have to bear that in mind.
Yeah. Well, I didn't realise it was a lot more going on behind the scenes than I'd ever care to see myself. But so, I know, to protect yourself as well, you have to come across as a strong person. But you must have days where you just go, I shouldn't be doing this.
No, I don't ever think I shouldn't be doing this.
But, like, we all... I'm not even talking about...
I do have days where I'm like, I can't be bothered, yeah.
No, but, like, we all have, like, our doubts, like... And so it's not necessarily about porn, but, as I say, because it's quite an extreme job, there must be some times where you just think, no.
Honestly, there's not. Like, I honestly love sex industry. I love it all. I do.
Well, listen, Valerie, thanks for being so candid about it. I'll play a song. Summer Here Comes by Grando. Thanks so much,
Thank you, Valerie,
for coming in. And also, yeah, before you go, did you have some problem with Twitter, by the way?
Yes, my Twitter account is suspended now for a month.
Why?
I have no idea. I had 32,000 followers, and all of a sudden I went to log in one day, and it's just said your account's been suspended.
And I've emailed them
about 14 times. I've not got any response, so I just created another one, and it's just ridiculous. So I'm hoping I'll get it back one day.
And so is that just chit-chat, or...?
I have no idea.
No, but on your Twitter, is it just chit-chat, or...?
It's photos.
Is it, I just pissed on a bloke, it was great?
No, I mean, it could be anything. Like, I do, obviously, a bit of modelling as well, so it could be photo shoots, it could be if I have new scenes come out, if I'm in a bad mood, if I'm having a laugh, if I'm, you know, without with my girlfriends, it's whatever.
So what's your plan for the rest of the day? This doesn't sound... Well, I just want to know, what is your plan for the rest of the day? Because you're not working today.
I'm not working today. Today I'm going to view a flat and hang out with my daughter.
All right, well, listen, thank you again for coming in. Here's Granddaddy, and be safe.
Thanks.
Summer here, kids. Let's go.
Granddaddy on a Sunday there. Oh, God, I sounded like Terry Wogan. Jesus, I want to watch out for that. Another guest coming in, Michael Greco. Thank you so much for coming in. So you're a sex addict, Michael, yeah?
No, I don't
know. Ash, what, what's he doing in here? I thought
Ash.
What's happening? No, obviously it was nice talking to Valerie, but it's the only time I've ever, because obviously I've got notes on you,
right?
But I wasn't able to look you up on a porn site beforehand.
No, I'm not on a porn site. I'm an actor. I'm not a porn star. Not a sex addict.
But Rocky,
I have had
Sylvester
sex.
Stallone did. Remember, he famously to make ends meet, he did a porn film.
I think he did, you're right.
Before I've seen that one.
Have you?
Oh, yeah, you can get all those.
Really?
There's this thing called The Net, Michael. Honestly, you should look at it.
No way.
So, now, people obviously would know you from 98, playing Beppe. 98 to... You were there for 4 years.
Yeah, for about 4.5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I did Coronation Street for about 6 weeks.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
recently?
Yeah. About 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I couldn't do it for any longer than that because people just think they own you.
Well, they pretty much do because they pay your wages, right?
No, so I'm not talking about that. I'm talking people on the street.
Oh, people on the street.
Like, you must have got not been able to do anything.
Oh, man, where do I start for the grief I used to get? And every now and then I still get a little bit of grief. But, you know, it's been 15... God, when did I finish EastEnders? 2002?
Two, yeah.
2002, May 2002, I think it was. So it's been 12 years,
yeah.
And I still get, oh, Beppe, oh, yeah. And that's it. You don't hear what they say afterwards. They just go, oh, yeah.
But Beppe was a nice character, wasn't he? He wasn't one
of them. Yeah, he was.
It's the ones who play the bad people. That's where it gets frightening.
Yeah. I think when they will ask you up to the office, I think, if they say, look, we want your character to turn into blah, blah, blah. And they want to warn you. So
yeah.
I seem to remember there was a storyline where they wanted me to contract gonorrhea. And I was like, okay.
Which is a kind of cheese, yeah?
A kind of cheese, yeah, from Switzerland. And basically, because the whole point of the story was Beppe was sleeping around with a lot of women. And they wanted a moral of the story, right? And I was like, okay, do you realise how much grief I get in the street as it is without someone going, oh, Beppe, you got gonorrhea.
So you were able to say no.
I said, I can't do that.
I take it you trained, yeah?
Yeah, I trained at Guildford School of Acting from 89 to 92, which we did a lot of, I was a bit of a Billy Elliot, actually. I was a very good footballer as a kid, had trials with Crystal Palace, which I know you're Crystal Palace
Eagles.
Fan. Eagles.
So what age were you when you had the trials at Crystal Palace?
I was 13, 14. And this was the era just before Vinnie Jones kind of era, where it wasn't about skill and grace. It was all about getting smashed in the head,
right.
You know, and elbows in the face. And I was very fast, and I used to get kicked on a lot, but I was quite small. So those days of being Zola weren't good back then.
You're bigging
Zola.
Yourself up a little bit there,
Michael.
Bit.
I was just a bit, yeah. Didn't make the grade, but I still enjoy a game of football every now and then.
When you say you go for trials, is that like for a game or a couple of
weeks?
Yeah,
what happens is I played for a young team called Battlebridge Boys Club, which is based in Surrey, and they're still going now, a very good team. And then you get scouts to come and watch your game, because we played in quite a big league, and then they'll say, right, in Selsdon, I think it was Selsdon, or maybe in Selhurst, it could have been in Selhurst, they're going to have, they're interested in you, Crystal Palace scouts are interested in you playing for them and come to play for the youth. So they got quite a few of us together, and about 50 boys turned up, and you play a few games throughout the day. And I remember having an absolute nightmare. Because
but that's all you get. That's,
yeah, you have a
that's
few
a
games.
Bit shit, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. You have a few games because they've come to see you play. They think, you know, you're good. And then what they do, they just cross you off the list. It's ruthless. So out of those 50 boys, there might have been two or three that would have gone on to the next step and then played.
So the night before, I take it, you went to bed dreaming of Wembley and the like.
Yes, exactly. Dreamt of Wembley, and the nearest I got was the Tube Station, I think.
Well, you know, it's a nice Tube Station, isn't it?
It's a very nice Tube Station. It's just been done up recently.
I like the tiling they've done there.
Very nice tiling. They got a nice little news agent there as well.
That's very important to have a news agent.
Very important.
So, yeah, fuck football and all that. Yeah,
football. Who wants football?
Local news agents and all that. Laughing.
Yeah.
So I take it then you were obviously brought up in Surrey then?
I was brought up in Surrey, moved to London in 1992 when I left GSA, moved to Crouch End, which I know is very near to where someone lives.
I live in North London.
Yeah,
everyone lives in North London.
Everyone lives in North London. But then I moved to Chiswick, and I love Chiswick. I moved to Chiswick about 15 years ago.
Traitor.
Yeah. But I've always been a Chelsea fan, so it was moving closer to home, basically.
So why were you a Chelsea fan then?
Well, I was a Leeds United supporter when I was a kid. Back
you seem a very mixed up child.
Hang on, there is method to my madness. When I was a kid, back in the 70s, Leeds were the best team. And of course, kids always support the best team. They got the kit. It was the,
not me, Crystal Palace, third division. I started supporting them, yeah.
Well,
I just like the underdog, Michael.
True.
That's why I love Pepe.
Yes, everyone loves Pepe.
But so then what was, like, because weirdly, a lot of the people who come from EastEnders come from that, that pretend acting school that they sing and dance in. What, you know the one I mean?
Which one's that?
I think, is it in Islington or something?
Annacher?
Yeah.
There's quite a few people who come from Annacher. Martin Kemp, I think, went to Annacher.
But isn't that just one of those, like, something to do for kids at the weekend?
I think it is initially, and then I think it's you do it full time, don't you? Monday to Friday. I might be wrong.
Right.
Maybe it's Sylvia Young that you do Monday to Friday. Maybe Anna Sher is just at the weekend.
And so then, right? So you moved to Chiswick to be near, I guess. So like then, would you move to Liverpool next week now that they're top of the league?
No, not at all. No, they're top of the league.
I think you should do that, Michael. Just whoever's winning, just move to that area.
Right. Interesting concept there. Maybe not.
So what was your first acting job then?
My very first professional acting job when I left drama school was West Side Story in Leicester Haymarket, which I'm not sure if it's there anymore. And I played.
Leicester's still there.
Leicester is still there. It's only because we sing about Leicester in one of our songs at Chelsea.
Right.
You know, flying over sea and land and Leicester, that malarkey. Have you heard about that one?
Well, not being a Chelsea fan.
No.
Is it slagging off Leicester?
Yes, a little bit.
But they're not rivals.
No, they're not rivals. But it's a pun in the. How does it go again? Now you put me on the spot. I can't remember how it goes.
Nobody has put you on the spot. You brought it up.
Over land and sea. And Leicester, as if Leicester isn't land and sea. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, it's not great banter from Chelsea.
It's not great banter.
But so, right, so West Side Story, was that one of the sharks or the...
I was a shark. And I was the butcher shark on the cast. I think there were six sharks and five of them were gay and I was the only straight guy. And this is a true story. They would get to the dressing room 2 hours before to prepare their makeup and their hair.
Right.
And I'd roll in about half an hour before the curtain goes up with a copy of The Sun under my arm, just gone to the betting shop and put a bet on the horses and the football. And they'd be prepared 2 hours previous. And I gave them a bit of oomph and a bit of butchness. To, But they were the campus. The sharks are supposed to be the Puerto Ricans, the one of the roughest gangs in New York at the time, and we weren't, basically.
But it was a musical, though.
Yes, I know.
Musicals aren't real.
Musicals aren't real, but I think they are in my mind. My whole life is in me. I love musicals. I really love
them. Yeah.
I'd like to tell you, I was a proper Billy Elliot. I used to have ballet classes and jazz classes and tap classes when I was younger, and then 2 hours later, I'd be on the football pitch going, "Oi, Ivory Sandwich!"
But and so
whatever that is.
So then after West Side Story, did you get an agent after that?
I got an agent straight from drama school,
right?
And that was my first professional job, and I pretty much did theatre for about 4 or 5 years. Treaded the boards, did a lot of stuff for the Battersea Arts Centre, which is still going now.
Yeah, Battersea Arts Centre.
Fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
And I did a lot of fringe theatre for a long time without getting paid, and then I was doing a tour of All's Well That Ends Well. With the Oxford Stage Company, and I got a call. They wanted to see me for The Bill, right? So I went for a copper in The Bill, and literally that afternoon went for a part in EastEnders as well. For Beppe, infamous Beppe. All right, Beppe. All right, Beppe. All right, Phil. All right, Grant. We all sound the same. We are actually the same person.
It's bringing back lovely memories for me, though.
Right, is it?
Yeah. you could do it as that voice all right.
Yeah. All right, Beppe. All right, Phil. All right, Steve. Even Kathy. She's my name, ain't she, Kathy? Where's my track? I went up for the part in The Bill, and literally, as I went for the recall for both of them, I got The Bill in the morning. They phoned me in the morning, said they wanted to do a 2-year contract in The Bill, and then that afternoon I got EastEnders. So hadn't been a struggling actor for 5 years, treading boards and had no money, had been on holiday, was 10 grand in debt, you know, I had bailiffs on the door, knocking on the door. I got two huge jobs and I had to decide which one to do, either Beppe or The Bill. Beppe or Bill.
But were they both 2-year contracts?
They were both 2-year contracts.
And was the money significantly different?
Huge, huge difference.
Right, yeah. So you went to EastEnders?
I went to EastEnders, Sean, because I liked, you know, the programme, and it was a great, I watched it all my life.
But did you not think that if you did The Bill, you would have got less chip on the street, though?
Yes, quite possibly, because I think at the time EastEnders was watched by probably 20 million people.
Yeah,
which is huge, which is nowhere near it now.
I think it's about 7 or 8 now.
Right, and I do understand for one reason or another, there's more channels, there's more that people want to watch, and maybe EastEnders isn't as good as it used to be. But The Bill was still pretty popular at the time as well.
Yeah, no.
But I wouldn't have got probably half the hassle.
But
yeah.
That's the weird thing about EastEnders. Like, I tend to, like, if I'm bored and it's on, I won't turn it over. And obviously, I've got a slight obsession by Danny Dyer.
Oh, right, right.
But it's that thing of, which I think they're trying to make changes now. But, like, it was all right when it was back then, but the EastEnders isn't like that anymore. And they haven't kind of moved with any times.
Right, it's still the same. So I haven't watched it for a long time.
No, but in the sense that the real East End,
right.
like initially a soap opera is supposed to reflect on reality and just make it kind of more soapy. But, you know, those characters don't exist in the East End anymore.
There's a lot of fights in that pub, isn't there?
There isn't in the equivalent. Right. Like, I think there was a survey done recently where those houses that, like, on the Albert Square, you know, that these people who are barely scratching a living together, apparently they're worth $750,000.
Yeah.
And so they're just going to go, well, this makes no sense.
Yeah, how does Dot earn that when she's working in the laundrette for £2.50 an hour? Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Well, it's, you know, she's obviously got no mortgage on her house.
Well, the price of fags alone would have bankrupted her.
Yeah, I mean, she smokes 60 a day.
But so I take it they were happy times, but I'd imagine... Well, you would have got, not bored, but just felt like a factory after a bit.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword in a way. I mean, there were very, very happy times, and it gave me a great life and still has given me a great life. But there's always price to pay for doing something like a soap where you're regularly on TV playing the same character. And I think at the time I was just ready to move on. You know, I wanted to do something else.
We'll get to it. So did you leave EastEnders or were you pushed?
It was a mixture of both, really.
You were pushed.
No, I wasn't pushed. I wanted to leave.
I've got your contract here. but so what was that like? Were you coming to the end of a contract and then it was getting tense?
Yeah, I was coming to the end of a contract and basically they just said, you know, we're not going to renew your contract. Which was, I was...
But that sounds like you were pushed, Michael.
No, it was a case of... And I'm not joking because I've got nothing to prove to you now and I don't need to you.
Yeah, we're only having a laugh. Don't get heavy on me.
Leave it out, baby.
No, I'm not getting heavy. It's just, it was just one of those situations where we both had the same state of mind.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy there and things weren't going.
But I think the point I was trying to get at, were you given warning?
Like, yes. I was given warning, yeah.
So like a good like 4 month period you could start preparing.
Yeah, exactly.
But look, we're going to talk about what happened to you since then, but we'll play a track because I want you to have a little rest and I will slag off Chelsea, I'd imagine, during this bit. But let's play, this is Harvest Minister's Temple to Love. Temple to Love on a Sunday.
Temple to love.
Finance Ministers there. You listen to Sean Hughes. Like, weirdly, a lot of the show's been about sex and all the songs are about love, but not with Michael Greco still in with me. So we've gone through EastEnders now, so you left that. So what happened after that?
Basically, I took some time out. My father passed away very sadly, and I went off the rails a bit, really. Didn't like what I had become as an inverted commas celebrity, and I didn't like what was happening to me. So I moved away from acting and the whole social, and I moved abroad for a while.
Well, you stopped acting totally?
Yeah, I stopped acting totally. Because the phone had stopped ringing for a start, and it was like, well, you know, but there's no choice.
Is that like, people talk about this like curse of the soap opera. It's very hard to kind of break out of that, isn't it?
It is very hard. We'll talk about this, but I've lived in Los Angeles for the last 3 years, and ex-soap stars from Neighbours and Home and Away.
I know.
Doing unbelievably well from Russell Crowe to Chris Hemsworth and blah, blah, blah. I can mention 10 massive A-list stars who've been in Neighbours and Home Away and gone on to do huge things. And there hasn't been one EastEnders, Coronation Street, Emmerdale star that has actually left England, gone to Los Angeles and tried to make, well, and made it.
Yeah.
Some of them have tried and fallen, unfortunately. But it's incredible what it... And it's nothing to do with the stigma of being a soap star in England. Because Americans take you on face value.
Yeah, yeah. But what is it about over here? Like, regardless of, like, saying that they made it in LA, very seldom do they make it even here. Like, if you go out of a soap, you seem to be going, right, that's your bit done now.
Yeah, it's...
Did they warn you about that before you went into EastEnders?
Absolutely not, no. If you had a list of everything, say, look, this is... Sign on the dotted line, but read these 20 facts about what happens to you when you become... Yeah. A huge soap star.
They should, by rights, be doing that.
Well, I don't know. It's a grey area, Sean. It really is. I think when I signed for EastEnders, I didn't know what I was letting myself in for, for that extent. But I was 28, so I was, you know, I was pretty much grown up. It's not like I was 16 where it could really affect you badly. And I think sometimes I'd become maybe a victim of my own success in a way, because my character had taken off quite a lot in the first couple of years.
But like, I know this is probably embarrassing, but you did get voted like sexiest soap star and all that every year,
right,
didn't you?
Right, and you know, it's a great accolade to have, and I enjoyed that, and it showed that your character was popular. But sometimes because you are one of the biggest soap stars on TV at that time, it then has a detrimental effect on your career should you want to leave.
Yeah.
And I can really understand to this day why Ian Beale has been there for 97 years, and Steve McFadden has been there for 96 years, because they earn a good wage. They've probably got very nice houses.
Like, it's a job, rather.
It's a job.
Yeah.
It becomes a job. But for me, and I really mean this, I didn't feel, after a while, I felt that I wanted to spread my wings a bit and just do other work. But unfortunately, it didn't happen.
But acting work, though, yeah?
Absolutely, I wanted to do other
acting
work.
So did you go up for loads of stuff after that?
No, I didn't go up for loads of stuff at all. It was, you know, like I said, the phone had stopped ringing. And there was very, very few opportunities for me.
So you must have got very depressed at that point then, yeah?
No, never got depressed. That's not the kind of person I am. I got downbeat in a sense that I wasn't getting the offers that I wanted to, and I wasn't getting put up for jobs. So
this downbeat involved, like, drinking a lot?
No.
Right.
No.
So, like, you seem pretty personal about that, because, like, things like that, like, it is, like, you know, because also, like, we live in a society where it's so vacuous that, like, we're going to talk about what you've been up to, and you've done some really successful stuff as well.
Yeah.
But I'm sure even now people go, oh, what have you been doing? If you're not on telly, you're dead.
Exactly that. And people see me now, go, oh, bear, mate, where you been?
I know.
I've been, and so I go, oh, well, you know, I've been around. I thought you were dead, sir. I ain't seen you on TV for ages.
I get that all the
time. And that's just
as well.
The women.
Yeah.
And then the men go, oh, bear, mate, I thought you were, you know. But you get that all the time.
Yeah.
If you're not on telly constantly, people think you're either dead or you've given up.
So was it a situation where, because like you stopped in 2002, so then you were just hanging around doing very little for quite a while then?
For quite a while. I then started playing poker on the side, funny enough, professional poker. Well, not professional. I was doing it amateur, but I was doing it because I was bored.
Right.
I was bored with what was happening in my life, and I moved away. I moved to Australia for a while. I moved to Vegas.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, how long did you move to Australia for?
Only for about 6 months.
On your own?
Yeah.
And did you have any family over there?
No.
So, like, what was your point of contact? You just went into a hotel and then...
Yeah, went into a hotel. I had a bit of money saved up and started playing poker tournaments over there. And then,
but did you go over to do poker?
Yeah, I went over there to play poker specifically. Okay. And then while I was outside of the world, I'd go to Hong Kong. There's a place called Macau. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I've heard of it.
You've heard of Macau? It's like a mini Vegas. And it's like an hour's ferry from Hong Kong. And it's the only place in China where you can legally gamble.
Right.
So it's obviously full of Chinese. And Baccarat is the biggest... gambling game in China, and they all go to Macau to spend all their money, and this very few Westerners go there. And I went there to play poker. I was there for a couple of weeks. It's a very strange place.
What's your poker domain? Your handle?
My handle.
You all have poker names, don't you?
Oh yeah, Big Mook.
Big Mook. Okay.
Yeah, I was the Big Mook.
Okay. And so, had you always been good at poker?
Yeah, I'd always been a gambler. So my dad picked me up from school when I was three, took me to the bookies before he took me home, and got me to pick a horse, and it came in, and I was hooked ever since.
You know, do you gamble all the time now still?
I still have a little tickle, yeah.
Yeah, but just that's what I mean.
I love it. I love gambling on the football. I love gambling on the dogs, the horses.
I'll tell you something. Dumbarton let me down for 400 quid the other week.
No way.
Fuckers.
What, did they lose?
Yeah, they're the only one out of 14 bet accumulator.
Mate, there's always one. Always one team that's going to let you
Dumbarton?
Down.
But Dumbarton?
Dumbarton?
Come on.
Obviously, you know loads about Dumbarton and who plays up front for them and whether they were injured or not.
I tend to do that. Look, weirdly, see if you agree. I tend to, obviously with the Premier and stuff, you kind of know. Mind you, this time of the season, you don't really
very
know how they're going to go.
Very difficult this time of season.
But I can usually get three or four that are sure there, and then all you do is you look at if the odds are really long, like Rangers usually you put in, Celtic usually put in, and like if say there's a 4-1 to 4 on, you put them as your accumulator, and that tends to work, but don't get too greedy.
Don't use
Dumbarton.
Never go for Dumbarton. Scottish football is very unpredictable for a start. Secondly, I was always told that, and I do it, I fall for it all the time, doing an accumulator on with odds on football teams is a road to ruin. Treble is the maximum you should do, because there literally is one. I mean, look at Barcelona lost this weekend. They were 4-1 on to win.
Well,
that game.
I never do big money. That's what. But right. The only reason I do it is like I love Crystal Palace. But to be fair, on a Sunday, unless it was a big game like the Liverpool Man City, like if Hull are playing Stoke, I'll be kind of reading the paper and watching that.
Yeah.
So I need to have an interest. I'll have to do first scorer or something.
Fantastic. I love that. Gives you a bit of an interest. It gives you some excitement. I love that.
And it's not because Ray Winston stole his soul and is telling me to do it at half-time either.
Exactly.
What's he like?
I know. Half-time, it was like Steven Gerrard was, I think, 14-1 to score the next goal for Liverpool. And that was very tempting, but
Have you got an actual account?
No, because I live in the States now, so I've got no account.
So, right, did you make some money on the poker then?
Made a lot of money on the poker, did very well.
What kind of stakes are we talking?
My biggest win in, there's the World Series of Poker every year, which is coming up actually soon. It's the end of May till the sort of third week in July. And the main event is $10,000 to play, which is about £6,000.
Yeah, that's quite a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Just to get in?
Yeah, just to play. There's about 6,000-7,000 entrants, and the winner takes home about $9 million, which is about £6 million.
That's a big punt, though, isn't it?
It's huge. I mean, the odds on you winning are very, very slim.
But is it winner takes it all?
Winner takes 20% of the prize pool.
Right.
Second gets pretty much $5 million. Third, and it goes down in increments.
The top 20 or
something? The top 10%. Right. So if 6,000 people played, 600 would get paid, pretty much.
And you were getting into that 600?
Yeah, I came 150th out of 7,000 a few years ago. I got about 58 grand. But I came third out of 2,000 and I won $250,000, which wasn't bad.
Wow, that's...
wasn't bad.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
and so did you play a blinder or did the cards go your way?
I played a blinder. The cards didn't go my way in the end because it was called a flip. We call it a flip. It was basically two over cards to a pair. There were three of us left. And if I had hit my card, I would have then at least come second, which was 400 grand.
Right.
And the winner got 650 grand. So basically that coin flip, it's like a coin flip, we call it a coin flip, that coin flip cost me 150 grand minimum.
And so are you able to keep your cool, obviously? The acting comes in handy then, less so the singing and dancing.
Acting does come in handy, it does, but your heart rate it's almost like it's coming out of your chest.
Yeah, I can imagine. So how do you,
I wear a baggy top, you know, I wear a tracksuit top. Some guys wear sunglasses because the eyes give away everything.
Well, they kind of get diluted if you're panicking and stuff.
Yeah, you've literally got to have a neutral expression throughout, whether you're bluffing or whether you're not. You have to bluff. If you can't bluff, you can't win at poker.
Yeah.
You have to be aggressive. We call it being aggressive. Like a golfer, if he wants to go for two birdies on the last two holes, he has to go for the pin. It's like poker. You have to go and be all-out aggressive to win that hand.
So at this point then, had you decided, that's acting done, I'm just going to be a professional poker player?
It was paying the bills. It was paying my mortgage.
$250,000 was doing quite a lot.
It wasn't bad.
It's a big house you got there, Michael.
Well, I had to give a lot of it away because I was sponsored and away from this guy. He was like, oh, yeah, I put you in. And I was like, the first tournament he put me in was the first tournament that I did well at. And so I had to give him a huge chunk.
Right. Who was this guy?
Oh, just some
concierge.
Yeah.
I pick up your bag and bring it to the room.
Yeah, take it to the room. Anything you want to do, eh? He wasn't Welsh. He was Italian.
Right.
It was great, and I loved it, and obviously that I told you the phone had stopped ringing. I'm not shy. I'll tell you. The phone would stop ringing.
These things happen.
These things happen. Look, it's you. I think everybody gets the second bite. Everybody gets the second bite of the cherry at some point. Doesn't matter what business you're in.
No, can I point out, because obviously it's radio, you are looking like a mean fighting machine. Were you always working out through this time?
Through this time playing poker, always, yeah. Because 90% of the time you're sat down playing poker, playing cards, and you get no exercise, and you eat your food at the table. And a lot of the food that you find at the casinos it's very bad. So I made sure I went to the gym pretty much sometimes twice a day in the
but
morning.
But you're looking like you still do that. Like you're just one of those guys who goes to the gym.
Yeah, I'm obsessed by it now, actually. I'm quite addicted. It's a nice addiction to have.
God, everyone in the show tonight is addicted to something.
Everyone's addicted to something.
Unbelievable.
Doesn't matter
me,
whether it's good for you
Maltesers.
Or really? Actually, if you're going to have chocolate, it's probably not the worst chocolate to have, Maltesers, the honeycomb.
Well, you know, my little tip is, people who will have a Malteser and just buy it, they're scum of the world. Scum.
Yeah,
you suck it. You just suck it so you get the glory. Yeah. It's just kind of...
You put it in the fridge for a bit beforehand, right?
Freezer. I'm hardcore.
Oh, you freeze it. Even better.
Anyway, let's talk about Robbie. So then you got to... You were playing poker and then you moved to... Is it at this point you moved to LA then?
I moved to LA. No, I'd stopped playing poker because it was just getting to the point where I wasn't enjoying it. I really missed acting again. And I felt it was enough time for me to now to give it another crack. So I decided to go move back. I was in Australia at this point, moved back to England.
Did you try to get any jobs when you were in Australia?
No, because the visa situation is very, very difficult, just as difficult as it is in the US. Moved back to England, applied for my US working visa.
And did you try for any jobs in England?
In England, no. I just decided when I was in Australia, I phoned up this company that sorted out visas. Paid them a bit of cash. They did everything for me. And 3 months
later... Did that little concierge sort that out?
Little concierge called Mario. And he sorted me out my visa. And next thing, I was in LA living there for 3 years. And now I'm going back there this week.
And so things are going well there.
Fantastic. As soon as I arrived, I auditioned for a job called Hatfield and McCoy's.
Yeah, which is very popular.
Great job. Which won Emmy Awards, Golden Globes. It was with Kevin Costner and Tom.
Cowboys.
Yeah, it's based in the 1850s. It's two rivalries, the Hatfields and McCoys, which until
back
about...
Back to West Side Story,
back
eh?
To West Side Story, you know. And I had a great role in that, and it was one of my first acting jobs for 10 years.
But so, like, again, like, just... When you went to LA, did you have people you could go with there? Or, again, with this very much, Beppe?
I went there literally with no agent, no manager. I literally had to get to know people there and just start again.
Well, good on you, mate.
Yeah, thanks, man. It was difficult, you know. I started again. I was like, look, I can make it in England. I've made it in England, even though it went a bit sour. But you know what? I'll make it again in the US. And it's steadily, it's got better and better. I've just done a big film... action film in Mexico recently, which has just been sold around the world, so that'll be out soon. And I've got two more films coming up this summer.
That's great.
Yeah.
And are you getting into the whole action guy?
Yeah, and I think it does help that I know this is radio, obviously, so you can't see my six-pack. So
we've mentioned it, Michael.
Did I mention my six-pack?
Well, I've mentioned it. And
oh, you are right. You did mention
but
it.
But it's kind of going against the fact that you pretended you were Zola when you were younger. That doesn't really go with the whole thing. So we're all a bit confused.
Well, yeah, I'm a little bit confused, actually.
But So is action, because like that's the thing, like it must be so horrific for any trained actor to see someone like Vinnie Jones making a bit of a success in America with very limited talent.
Yeah, I think I've never been the type of person though, Sean, and I really mean this, that when I see people doing well, I've never gone, oh, why is he doing well?
I know, I appreciate it, but just, you know, understanding, I mean, the logic,
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, it's weird, you know, and I always say that you make your own luck, and Vinny has obviously done about 70 films.
Yeah.
Incredible. I mean, you know, I'm not
but
saying...
But Jason Statham's like... Who's
oh, it? Jason Statham is probably the highest paid British actor in
and
Hollywood.
And he wasn't... He was a diver, wasn't he?
I think he was a diver, and I think the story was that he met Guy Ritchie at a taekwondo class in North End Road, Fulham.
Who doesn't?
And who doesn't? Yeah. So, you know, if you want to meet Guy Ritchie, go down the North End Road, Fulham, and do your taekwondo. But I think Guy had this... I think they were friends, and they offered Jason a role in it.
But like, I'm delighted for people's success. Like,
yeah,
you know, as
absolutely.
I say, but it's unfathomable, is what I'm saying.
Right.
But would you like to? Because the weird thing about Hollywood, like, they are kind of stuck, and they tend to like English people doing those parts now. Because
yeah.
they're still giving Sylvester Stallone and,
right.
and
well,
Arnold, and they're like 80.
I know, but they're making their own films, aren't they?
Yeah.
And but they are box. They will sell. They will sell those guys. Being a British actor in LA does have its advantages, and the fact British actors are very good for a start.
Yeah.
They've had a lot of great training, and also they're very popular, and people love a British actor. They love the accents. But it's also, I must say, to any actor who wants to go to LA who is British, you've got to have a good American accent, because there are a lot of roles you'll be up for.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll have for them.
And did you have that in your locker already, or did you have to retrain?
I had to retrain, because what sounds good to a British ear doesn't sound so good to an American.
And are they asking you to do specific places in America as well?
Pretty much the West Coast, just a general American accent.
Right.
It's funny, because it's easier for us to do an East Coast and a South Coast, purely because years and years ago...
Get out of here!
there you go. The history lesson is, when the Brits settled in the southern regions and the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
they still maintained a lot of the vowel sounds.
Boston.
Yeah, Boston, exactly. Yeah. But and you know and the accent I did in Hatfield McCoy's was the southern redneck accent.
Right.
And it's very easy for us to do those.
Yeah, was
accents.
That fun to do? The accent.
Amazing.
But so, like I'm really delighted though. But they are all the new movies coming out, are they action films?
The two that I've done, are action films.
But see, look, this is great, and I just on a personal thing, I just don't understand where a load of really good actors seem to be just taking the dollar now, and there's so few brilliant actual dramas being made.
Right.
And they're all kind of... like, you see someone like Robert Downey Jr., who's just Iron-Manning it up to the thing.
Right.
And, like, you just know, like, you know, it's great that you're doing it, but then you're looking at the dialogue going, this dialogue is kind of...
Yeah, but you know what sells now is these $300 million plus movies.
I know that's the way it is, but I'm just saying, purely as you as an actor, would you... Because, like, the perfect example would be someone like Mark Strong,
right,
who tends to kind of do that. Are you hoping to get your in on there so then you can actually do some proper drama as well?
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I've done two action films, big action films that are coming out soon, but it's not what ultimately I wanted to do.
Yeah.
It hasn't stretched me as an actor at all, but... The thing about acting is you want to do every different type of role, you know. It's you've got to get what you can at the moment.
But just tell us one of the lines that you really had to go, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this, in the action film.
Oh, what did I
say? In the accent as well.
Oh, actually, in the action film, I played a Brit, so it's
all right. So he's evil then?
He's evil, yeah. Exactly. British roles are always evil, aren't they?
Can you remember any of the lines?
No, I can't remember any of the lines now.
Right, well...
I can remember some of the lines from Hatfield and McCoy's.
But they're good lines. Or is there some really dodgy ones in that?
They're kind of southern redneck lines.
All right, go on, give us one of those then.
I seen it, the hard in question, I seen forward that she could that short you. Right. And you see, I seen on Bob.
What the fuck are you talking
right,
about?
Right, exactly. That's what the director said on the first take.
Michael, it's been absolutely delightful. So I'm just so happy. And, like, just again... Like, obviously, you've just got a very positive attitude as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And what age are you now?
44.
Right, you're looking good in that fella.
Thanks.
Listen, we're going to have Crybaby in soon, so I'll give him time to warm up by playing quite a long track by Sufjan Stevens, a guy from Chicago, and the song's called Chicago.
Again. things go, all things go. Drove to Chicago. All things know, we sold our clothes to the state. I don't mind, I don't mind. I made a lot of mistakes in my mind. Slept in parking lots. I don't mind, I don't mind. I was in love with the place. In my mind, in my mind. I made a lot of mistakes. In my mind, in my mind. You came to take us. Crying in the van with my friend, it was for freedom from myself and from the land. I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes.
You came to take us. All things go, all things go. To recreate us. All things grow, all things grow. We had a mindset. All things know, all things know. You had to find it. All things know.
Oh,
Well, I hope that song took you to some wonderful places. A beautiful song. But time for live music, Crybaby, which is a one-man band, Danny Coughlan. So, Danny, when you're playing live, is it still just you?
It is at the moment, yeah. I've got a band, but they're kind of a bit wayward, so I usually play on my own.
What, they don't turn up?
It's been known.
I reckon, you know, if things go well with this record, Sat-Nav.
I reckon Sat-Nav, yeah. And
so you're from Bristol?
Yeah.
And so you've been in various bands, but now this is like you coming of age in
this
your
is,
own.
This is me getting old, not liking people anymore.
Right. So what age are you now?
44.
Right. You're still a bit young to be getting old.
Younger than some, older than a lot of others.
But so what? You don't like people anymore?
I don't know if you do. I don't know.
I've never liked them.
I discovered later on that I've never liked people.
Right, we should have met very early.
I think we should have done.
Could have saved you a lot of bother.
Yeah, and then we could have not liked each other.
But so, are you single then?
I'm not single, no.
Well, then you like some people.
She doesn't like people either.
Right, so you just, are you a couple now that, have you got kids?
I've got two kids, boys, they definitely.
You give me the whole, yeah. Oh yeah, man, it's like Nick Cave all the way. Yeah,
but he's got kids as well, and he lives a very nice life in Brighton.
Very, very good point. I'm the only one who's true to my word. 48 on my own.
I wish I could be like you. Maybe I could be. I've got
we'll
4 years.
This to you. We'll play this to your missus then. I'm sure she'd love to hear that.
I'm sure she will. And if you're hearing this, I don't like people. You know that. But I kind of like you.
But I take it but you will like people who come to see you play and buy your records.
I always love people like that.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
They're the best.
Well, because I don't know if it's like this when you're doing your one-man band, but obviously when I'm doing the comedy, it's just that amazing connection you have with an audience, and there's a lot of love in the room. Are you getting that?
Depends. Well, sometimes you do. Sometimes you've got to be open to it, haven't you? Sometimes when the nerves take over, I tend to shut down a little bit. But when I do have a little peek, out there? You do definitely. It's quite an awesome kind of feeling. Sometimes.
But you get nervous before shows.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But you've been doing this for quite a while, though, haven't you?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I still have the old retch now and again.
Are you okay now?
I'm all right now.
All right. Well,
a little bit.
Can I do anything to soothe you even more?
It's not going to
happen. Okay. So, right. So tell us about... So Crybaby, I kind of... Like, I heard some of the stuff and I love it. Yeah. And so this is... so is this... As I say, you said, alluding to the new stuff, it's when you decided you didn't like people. So it's kind of just... obviously we're going to play it in a stupid saying. Yeah, it's stupid saying the Scribe. What song are you going to play for us first?
I'm going to play This Time It's Over.
Jesus. It's a Sunday. Don't bring people down too much, though, Danny. Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
We were never gonna be the ones to set the world alight, eclipse the sun. Oh lover, oh what have you done? This time it's over. There's a shadow where your heart should be, a broken window to your sanity. But you know that you're the one for me. This time it's over. These will give me fingers and feet of clay. They were never yours to give away. Was it always up to you? Little things mean more to me. Briefest smile, a joy to be. Best seats at the A&D. This time it's over. You know I'll always be back for more. Even when my hand and heart were all dragging myself across the kitchen floor. This time it's over. You gave me these fingers and feet of clay. They were never yours to give away. Was it
always up to you. The sun, a lover, what have you done? This time it's over.
Yee-haw, that's Crybaby, Danny Coggan. Well, that was lovely. So I like it, it's very evocative.
Yeah.
Is that kind of one of the vibes you're going for in that sense?
I try and do things that are emotive and evocative without relying on the usual kind of evocative, emotive things that singer-songwriters do on their own.
Yeah, because like it was weird. Like the one man kind of singer-songwriter seems to have come from folk America initially, and the English obviously, but then they were probably influenced by the likes of Nick Drake.
Yeah,
but like it's. Whenever English people do it, like yourself and Richard Hawley and stuff, it's kind of you like to go for that kind of slight 50s kind of American, not folk, but just that weirdly kind of spared down kind of rock and roll, really.
Yeah, I think there's a sadness to a lot of that stuff, especially the British stuff, because I guess listening to the British stuff, English stuff in the 50s, it was quite melancholy. And I think it kind of failed to meet up to its American counterpart.
Right.
And I think therein lies, there's a certain failure to it, a kind of faded glamour to it.
And so, with your last band, was that a similar vein or?
No, it was a full on kind of 8-piece, kind of garagey, kind of bluesy folk band.
Well, yeah, but so you still got that garagey kind of thing.
Yeah, it's still kind of, it's still pretty bare bone kind of rattle and roll kind of thing.
And so are you kind of playing live gigs all the time now?
I've got a tour coming up in May with Camera Obscura coming up.
Great band as well.
Yeah, great band.
So, and so you're making a living out of it now as well?
Kind of.
Because you did work on the building site and stuff as well.
I still do.
You still do?
I still do.
What, the most miserable builder in the world, yeah?
I tell you what, I don't know if you met any builders, but I'm the happiest builder that ever was.
But so, and have you got an actual skill or is it labouring?
I'm a decorator.
Right.
Yeah, I do work on building sites. I do shop fitting.
Right.
So I go around the country making bars,
okay.
Pubs.
What, designing them? Or?
Well, yeah, kind of decorating them and making them look good.
What, putting some flowers on the shelf?
No, nothing that. That kind of looks soft-handed. A little bit more horny-handed than that. But.
So you're pretty good with your hands then?
Kind of, not really. Yeah, I get. It's building is smoke and mirrors, rather like show business, I guess.
Well, some of it, like I've got my handyman's Croatian, and he's pretty much. I was getting like he's great at the painting and decorating and stuff, and he's handy, you know, at everything. But he's one of those people that I just go on my pond filters and working. I can fix that, but everything like he did my installation for the attic and went, I will do that for you. And I know he's fucked it up,
but
I really like
it. He had a go. And that's what building is, it's having a go.
But hopefully there's more to it than that. I don't want everything crashing down eventually.
You'd be surprised. There's some amazing things I've seen in the name of building throughout the land.
That sounds like a really good U2 song. In the name of building. But do you enjoy the building then?
As it stays, as is not really.
You don't get nervous before you put a fitting in there?
I don't get nervous before I put the first coat on, no. Unless it's a vile colour or, I don't know, I don't. Because there's too many other things to worry about on a building site.
So you're doing that part-time now then?
I do it quite a lot.
Right.
Put it that way.
Is it cashing in?
I don't do cashing in.
Is it cashing in, Danny?
Sometimes.
Okay. Say no more. It's all right. We'll use an alias. They just come and, you know... Well, they used to do that back in the 70s, go to building sites and ask people for all their credentials and stuff. And
they still
have
do.
Do they?
But now it's more immigration now. So
right.
And throw people off or HSC, health and safety. It's not about that anymore. The tax man's probably given up. I mean, the amount of... goings on with cash in hand and all sorts.
But so, right, you do a full day's graft, yeah, and then you go home. What age are your kids?
10 and 2, nearly.
So, oh, 10, were you in prison for a bit?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, but so they're a handful. Obviously, you want to show some love to the wife. So, yeah, when do you get the time to do the music?
You tend to do it in your head a lot, in the van.
So, like, you'd be there, like, putting up a thing, going,
A lot of the tunes, right, I do are based on the kind of power tool,
right,
in the background. Like a Makita Sander, if anyone's listening, as a builder. That's in, probably in a D.
It's like proper British hip-hop.
Yeah, kind of power tool hip-hop.
That's, you've got a whole new genre now. We're laughing. Because, like, they're beats, you know, from, you know, doing that. Yeah. And your beats are from power drills.
Yeah.
So have you got tinnitus?
Not yet.
Right.
I will do.
So then you've got the 4-track at home, so then you kind of pretty much, like, is it when the mood takes you, then you go into your little studio?
I haven't got a studio. My studio is my phone.
Right.
I haven't got that luxury, unfortunately.
Can I just say you're not really selling yourself really well?
I'm not selling myself at all. Right. In the world of selling
Right,
myself,
just to kind of balance that, can I just say the Sunday Times Culture magazine said the last album a truly wonderful album, just in case you're thinking, what are we listening to this?
That wasn't me. That's someone else.
What are you listening to this fucking builder for? Who sings into his phone? But you put your ideas into your phone, and then what do you do to lay down the tracks, man?
Lay down the tracks, man. Yeah. If you've got an iPhone, get GarageBand for £2.49. I'm giving them some advertising there.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a tiny little, like, 8-track recorder, and I put everything in there, work it out, little string parts, guitar, bass part, whatever, lyrics, writing down in the notes. I've got a little notebook as well, just in case I lose the phone. And then when it comes to the time, it's all done, then it's time to make a record.
What happens if you're halfway through making the record and someone rings you?
I've got a lot of Fireman Sam in the background of a lot of the recordings at the moment.
And the two-year-olds and power drill.
And the power, there's a lot of power drill, right, a lot of swearing, there's a lot of swarthy, horny-handed men in the background.
And so, have you just brought out a new record as well?
I'm going to. We're in the second album. We're in the throes of the second album at the moment.
And so is that all recorded?
No, we're doing it at the moment as I speak.
We're just looking for the new upgrade from the iPhone. Yeah, for that, to download that new
one. If I pull the plug in, then, yeah, we can get on and do it, get it out.
I take it, like, it's extremely hard now because, like, you know, I think, obviously, hopefully the kids will like your stuff as well, but, like, I'd say it would be a mature audience who would really appreciate the kind of stuff you're doing.
Yeah.
And it's... So, like, it's that thing of, like, trying to get sales. Like, can you make money from even doing the shows as well?
You can break even. It pays for itself.
Right.
That's what I say. For me, personally, I mean, obviously, other bands can get by on it. But to be honest with you, there's not a lot out there unless you're prancing around in Lycra at the Brits, I guess. I don't know.
Who's been prancing around like the Brits? That was a lazy metaphor,
though,
Danny.
1994.
And you're a good lyricist as well. What's all this prancing around in Lycra at the Brits? Very disappointing.
That was Live Aid, 1984.
Yeah, exactly. That was Queen you were thinking of. They did all right for themselves
right.
Live.
Pretty good.
So, when can people get the new record then?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Right.
Probably early next year.
And so, have you got a website at the very least?
I have, yeah.
Right. What's that?
What is it?
You're asking me?
I'm saying, someone trying to mouth it through.
Oh, Cry Baby.
Oh, Cry Baby.
You think you might remember that?
I don't even
know. Danny, are you going to take this serious? Like, we brought you in here to kind of big you up, and now I think you might get a bit of building work out of it.
I pride myself on focusing on the important stuff. The art, the music.
Right.
Stuff like that. All that technical stuff.
And who do you listen to now yourself?
I still like listening to the old Scott Walker, you know.
Not the kind of the last couple of shite things he brought out.
Well, I've listened to Bish Bosh twice on the M5 going up and back.
I can imagine you just saying to the other builders, going, they're in your van going, oh, I like the sound of this Bish Bosh.
I have had some of them in the van, and what have you got on? Have you got any Rihanna or have you got any Scripps or Coldplay? I'm like, no. Got Bish Bosh, right? Something like that, mate. Stick it on.
And all of a sudden you're driving on your own?
Yeah. Drop me off.
Is there a record that you've heard in the last couple of years that just blew your mind?
Oh, God. Probably is, actually. But I can't remember what it is.
You know what? Were you a fan of the Birds?
Yeah.
Did you, you know the guy, is it Guy Clark?
Yeah.
Guy who left. Did you hear his solo album?
Gene Clark.
Yeah, Gene Clark.
Yeah.
Is it No Limit or something?
Mm.
Have you heard that album?
Kind of. Little Bits and Bobs.
It's an amazing album. I've just discovered that this
there's
year.
There's loads of stuff. This is the thing. I kind of, you remember a lot of stuff that you've heard only when you're reminded of it and you think, well, why didn't I sit down and listen to that? You know, it's like you revisit old, old records. And that's what I'm doing at the moment. I think, and you hear a lot of different things coming through that remind you of those things and you listen to new stuff.
Hey, man, there's only three chords. Command it.
There is only three chords,
We're going to all have to repeat. So this next song, your final song, what's it called?
It's called Police Car.
Police Car. And is this about a very tricky day on the building site?
There have been trickier days in the building site, but this isn't specifically about builders.
Well, can you give us a little vibe about what this is about so I can attune myself?
I guess you could say it's a murder ballad.
Okay, so that's chirpy.
So you came back to me, no drama, no fanfare, not quite equally. I was dumb and I was scared of all love that you gave me. You crawled home last night in the back of a police car with your sanctity intact and my heart in a jam jar. So where's the love that you stole in the back of a police car? In the back of a police car. In the back of a police car. If I can't have you, then no one will. Keep the eyes in the back of your head, though. Why did you kill all the love that we made in the back of a police car? In the back of a police car. In the back of a police car. In boxes and black plastic bags, you will always be my girl. Together, your head in my hands. Well, I hope you understand. Oh, lights are flashing in the back of a police car. 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 In the back of a, in the back of a, in the back of a.
That's Crybaby with, is it police car or back of a police car?
Police car.
Yeah, lovely. That was lovely. So these are all off the new album, then?
Yeah, this is coming off. We've got a single going to be coming out this summer. It's time with the tour, so then we're going to do finish with it.
Was that one of those two?
That was one, yeah.
All right, well, great stuff. And so will you actually bring out a proper single, or will it just be an iTunes nonsense?
I think it will be a single. We like our vinyl, and we like our other things.
Right. No, so do I, actually, but I think it's an age thing. I just like to have stuff,
really. I think a lot of people are doing it now. I think people learn to love it, even young'uns.
But listen, Danny, it's been wonderful. Because it's the end of the show now, I need to ask you, because the show has been about sex and poker, mainly. So how many prostitutes have you been with?
Two.
All right, that's pretty good. See, me, I've never paid for sex in my life, which has pissed off quite a few prostitutes, I can tell you that. You've been listening to... that was lovely, Crybaby. Look them up at oldcrybaby.com, I assume. Danny, you've been an absolute pleasure. Okay. I'm just going to, because we've had so much kind of smut on the show, and you know what I'm going to finish with? The Bee Gees.
Smutty.
Talked to me and he smiled, said, come and walk with me, come on, walk one more mile. Now for once in your life you're alone, but you ain't got a dime, there's no time for the fool. I just gotta get a message to you.
To die.